This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie revealed this week he has quietly had surgery to address his famous weight, lap band surgery, essentially a belt installed around the stomach. Earlier, he had said he could not see himself doing something like that. Too risky. But now he's made the leap. He's not the only one turning to surgery. Is this the way to address the country's obesity epidemic? Part of it. This hour on Point, weighing weight loss surgery. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. Are we talking about you? Have you thought about having it? Have you done it? How did it go? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It was very quietly done. Then it came out on Tuesday. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie at a press conference talked about his motivation for undergoing lap band stomach surgery in February.
I've been very fortunate for the last 50 years not to have any type of effects or complications from being overweight for the better part of the last 20 years. And so the decision that I made was that I had tried a whole bunch of other things. They hadn't worked. This was an opportunity to try something different. And I'm doing it for my long-term health. This isn't like to feel better tomorrow. This is about being healthier for the rest of your life and to try to extend your life for as long as you possibly can.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, they went in February, put on the lap band, and there he was talking about it for the first time this week. Joining us right now from Newark, New Jersey, is Dan Goldberg, health reporter at the Star-Ledger there. He's been following the Christie story. Dan, thanks for joining us. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
So give us some of the cloak and dagger here on how Chris Christie, famously a big guy, put this surgery together without anybody knowing about it.
Well, he was pretty clever. He checked into the hospital under an assumed name, which he still won't reveal, did it on a Saturday morning, and was back at work on Tuesday. So no one, and it was the holiday weekend in February, so no one really noticed.
Why is it public now? Did he bring it out himself, or was his hand forced?
No, the New York Post first broke the story. They called up Christie's press office and said they were going to run this story. According to Christie, his press officer came to him and said, how hard can I push back on this? And Christie said, not that hard. It was very secretive, even within the Christie administration. Very few people knew about it, but Christie said during his press conference that if asked, he would not directly lie about it. So when the New York Post got a hold of it, he opened up.
I want to ask about how he came around the decision to do it. Lots of Americans have weighed this, and many have done it. But here he was, Chris Christie. This was July of last year, interview with Jake Tapper on ABC's Nightline. Christie talked about his struggles with his weight, and he answered a question from Tapper about whether he would consider geriatric bypass surgery.
I've struggled with it for the last 30 years, on and off, and I'm trying. It may not look like I'm trying sometimes, but I am.
Do you ever think about gastric bypass surgery or anything along those lines?
No, it just doesn't strike me as something I'd want to do. Too risky.
Too risky, he said. Then, of course, that's not exactly what he did. Describe the surgery that he had, Dan.
Well, you're right. It's an important difference. Gastric bypass surgery, what he was talking about there with Jake Tapper, is a more invasive procedure. A lap band is basically an outpatient procedure where they will slip a band, usually a silicone band, around the stomach, and they can loosen or tighten it so that the pouch, the stomach pouch, is actually getting smaller and there's less food able to go into it. Christie went into the hospital at 7 a.m. and was back home in Mendham by 5. So it is a less riskier procedure. That being said, it offers less results. You will not lose as much, generally, not lose as much weight using the lap band procedure.
And about the timing now, I mean, His weight has sometimes been a political issue. We've got a little bit of Corzine, John Corzine's ad. This was from the 2009 campaign, and he was going after his then-challenger, Chris Christie's, weight. There was video with this with some very imposing images of Chris Christie's girth, and you'll hear the ad talk about Chris Christie throwing his weight around. Here it is.
If you drove the wrong way down a one-way street, causing an accident and putting the victim in a trauma center, would you get away without a ticket? Chris Christie did. If you were caught speeding in an unregistered car, would you get away without points? Chris Christie did. In both cases, Christie threw his weight around as U.S. attorney and got off easy.
Spooky music there, but the images of great, great, great big Chris Christie were sort of the most imposing thing about that ad. What about the political calculus here? Is it fair to say there is some people have thought about him as a presidential contender, maybe 2016, Dan?
Well, there's certainly political calculus coming from the pundit and media world. Everybody's trying to guess whether this means he's in the race, how it'll affect his race. For his part, Christie has said that it had nothing to do with that, that he looked at his family and he had turned 50 years old and he wanted to be there for his children and hopefully, he said, his grandchildren. And, you know, he certainly take him at his word for it that he does want to run around with his grandkids one day. But in terms of the political calculus from the media's point of view, I imagine the speculation is going to continue for at least the next 12 to 18 months till that wonderful time in Iowa again.
But what about his political advisors? In the media, it's out there that when he has thought about this in the past, he's had some big donors look at him and say, hey, Chris, with all that weight, how long are you going to be around? Does his own team think it has been or would be a big deal in politics?
Well, Christie has said about himself that he has a pretty healthy ego, and he's certainly been a very successful politician so far. So I can't imagine that there was too much concern, certainly on a state level. He is running for re-election this year and has a large lead in the polls. So there hasn't been much talk from his team about what this means. There have been two schools of thought from outside political observers that, A, this will allow him to be more of an everyman. He's going through, some, like you said, some of the same things that a lot of people go through and chosen an option that many people have chosen. And then there's another school of thought that says if he slims down too much, he'll lose some of that everyman quality. So it's, you know, sort of depends on how you want to look at it at this point.
How's it all going down in New Jersey? How's it being received, the news of the surgery, the lap band?
Christie remains incredibly popular in New Jersey, and the people who love him still love him, and even the people who disagree with him. We've seen some people say things along the lines of, well, I don't agree with him politically, but I wish him the best of luck on this new endeavor.
Dan Goldberg with the Star-Ledger joining us from Newark, New Jersey, Chris Christie's backyard. Thanks very much for your reporting and for being with us today, Dan.
Thank you. I love the show.
Here's Chris Christie. This, again, was the press conference on Tuesday, saying this is not about politics, his surgical effort to lose weight, but about wanting to be around as his children grow up.
I still have two children in elementary school, one in sixth grade, one in fourth grade. You know, so I'm in this father business for a while, and I hope someday, God willing, to be in the grandfather business. And so it's just their presence, you know, and knowing that you're getting older, and you want to be around for them.
You want to be around for them. Chris Christie taking steps, taking measures to try and cut that weight down with weight loss surgery. Many Americans have done it. You can join us at 800-423-8255. With us right now from Tempe, Arizona, is Dr. Robin Blackstone, bariatric surgeon, medical director of the Scottsdale Healthcare Bariatric Center, where they, I assume, do a lot of this and more. She is former president of the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Robin Blackstone, Dr. Blackstone, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on today.
I'm looking at a chart here of bariatric surgeries, which I assume includes a number of different things, lap band, bypass, and the rest. And from, you know, 2000, 2001 to, over the next decade, they are just skyrocketing here. What's driving the number of these up, Dr. Blackstone?
Well, the number of cases actually is fairly level over the last 5 to 6 years. But I think that the realization that a lot of people need more control and they need to be more in the driver's seat around their weight has finally kind of come to the fore. And really, to be honest with you, it's gotten to be so much safer to have surgery that I think the risk-benefit ratio is really in a lot of people's mind. wow, how sick am I going to be if I continue to be big versus taking the risk of surgery?
Walk us through the main options. Chris Christie chose the lap band. We hear a lot about bypass. What are the main options here?
So there's three main options that people are choosing. And I think, you know, Tom, it's important to say that almost every single person that comes to a surgical solution is going to have gone through an intense effort medically. They've dieted. They've maybe used medications. They really have tried to dial it in, you know, on their own or with the help of a physician or a medical team.
Yeah.
When they come to surgery, the lap band is a silicone band. It's placed around the top of the stomach. It has some tubing that goes to a port underneath the skin. And into that port, you put a little bit of saline. And the patient then has the band tighten around the top of the stomach.
So you can tighten it from outside if you want to cut down even further on how much you're going to
want to eat. Right. Okay. That's exactly right.
Okay.
And that requires a fairly intense follow-up. So, you know, people are going to have to come in and see their surgeon and the team, you know, fairly frequently to get that adjustment and to get to the point where they're losing weight steadily. The second option is really the sleeve gastrectomy. And now we're crossing over into a group of procedures that we call metabolic procedures because the way they work is not actually through physical restriction of food, but through changing the physiology and the connection between the brain and the intestine around food. And that's the sleeve gastrectomy. And the sleeve has become increasingly used among the bariatric community and for our patients. About 38% of procedures now are sleeve. And it basically involves removing about 80% of the stomach.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this about weight loss surgery, its popularity, who it's for, who it's not, whether it's a good thing that we're turning to it. New Jersey Governor Big Chris Christie just had his. They say he's lost 40 pounds. We're asking, is this the way to go? Dr. Robin Blackstone is with us from the Scottsdale Healthcare Bariatric Center, former president of the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Chris Christie, of course, has had a lot of public commentary about his weight. Famous interaction earlier this year with a former White House physician. This was Dr. Connie Mariano, down from your way, Dr. Blackstone, down from Arizona, said in an interview on CNN this past February that she was concerned about Chris Christie's weight.
I worry that he may have a heart attack, he may have a stroke. It's almost like a time bomb waiting to happen unless he addresses those issues before he runs for office.
And how big was that concern? This big, she said.
I'm a physician more than I'm a Democrat or Republican, and I worry about this man dying in office.
Chris Christie, the governor, did not go for that. He pushed back pretty hard in this public retort.
I find it fascinating that a doctor in Arizona who's never met me, never examined me, never reviewed my medical history or records, knows nothing about my family history, could make a diagnosis from 2,400 miles away. She must be a genius. My children saw that last night. And she sat there on TV and said, I'm afraid he's going to die in office. I have four children between 9 and 19. You know, my 12-year-old son comes to me last night and said, Dad, are you going to die? I mean, come on. This is irresponsible stuff.
Chris Christie saying back off then, but of course this week he's saying, hey, I've had weight loss surgery, and part of the reason I did it was because I want to be around for my children and my grandchildren. Maybe not so different from what the doctor was saying, and some tough words there a little earlier. Robin Blackstone, I know you're not his doctor and all the rest, but I mean, when you look at Chris Christie, does he look to you like an appropriate candidate for this kind of intervention, surgery?
I think Governor Christie is a perfect candidate for this intervention because he, by his own admission, said that he hadn't really gotten to the point where he was what we call sick obesity or severe obesity with, you know, severe diabetes and hypertension. But clearly the handwriting was on the wall for him. And having not been able to get control of the weight problem, he was worried that in the future that might actually become, you know, a problem. Those other you know, related diseases could become a bigger problem for him. So I think there's a lot of people that really identify with Governor Christie's battle, and surely he would get sick at being at that weight in the future if he's not now.
You began to walk us through the option, and I'm sure people are curious about this. We've got the lap band, which he did. It's inserted laparoscopically, those little tiny incisions, I guess, and in it goes. And then you can adjust it as you go, as you say, through a port with the saline solution to make it tighter or less tight. Then you talked about a sleeve gastrectomy. And did I understand you said that means actually removing 80% of the stomach?
Right. You know, the stomach is the source of a hormone called ghrelin, which is what really drives our hunger. And we all know that the secret to weight loss is not being hungry. So when you remove a large portion of the stomach, you actually decrease the level of ghrelin that people make. And it really has an effect on the brain of just giving you a sense of fullness all the time. You don't develop that really ravenous hunger, and it helps a lot to control your weight. But all of these procedures are really performed laparoscopically, Tom. Mm-hmm. Over 96% of them are done that way, regardless of what type it is. So, and that's really improved the safety a lot.
Lap band, sleeve gastrectomy. What's the third big option?
The third option is really what is the gold standard option for patients that may be a little bit more advanced in the obesity and the related medical problems that people have with it, because it is the gastric bypass, and it combines creating a small stomach pouch with a rerouting of the nutrients so that the nutrients come into the system a little bit later. And bypasses the part of the intestine that we think is really involved with diabetes. So for a person with diabetes and high blood pressure and sleep apnea, this is probably a really good option for them. And the safety of the procedure has really gotten good. So, you know, the safety is not so much of an issue in bariatric surgery as it was. But I want to say that it's important that every patient that would go to surgery realize that there's risks involved, both short-term risks and longer-term risks. They need to know what those are.
And there are lifestyle issues here, right? I mean, we've had some very famous examples of this, people doing this. Al Roker famously did it and talked very publicly about some tough intestinal discomfort that came along with this for him.
Right. And some embarrassing moments, I think I recall. So, you know, it is a lifestyle change, and you do have to make adjustments in the types of foods that you eat, certainly in your alcohol consumption. It's not recommended. So, you know, there are some really really big adjustments. The biggest one is you have to be committed to lifelong exercise, careful eating. What these procedures do is they give you more control. They put you back in the driver's seat around your weight, but it's not like there's no battle. It's not an easy solution. There still is a lot of work that has to be done, and I'm sure Governor Christie is really well aware of that.
You want to really pay attention to people who have done it and those changes, because they are not insignificant and they are not always comfortable. Lorna is calling from Berea, Kentucky. Lorna, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What's your story?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I had lap band surgery about 5 years ago, and I used to weigh 305 pounds, and I currently weigh right around 185.
Wow.
And I would do it again tomorrow. Now, the thing that I like about it the most is it's a very slow process. You lose a pound or two a week if it's adjusted correctly. And that's about what doctors want you to lose in the first place. So, and then about 2 years into it, I'd lost about 105 pounds. I lost about 50 pounds a year. And I had a car wreck, and they needed to open up the band, so they took some of the saline out, and so that I could have the nutritional support that I needed in order to
recover,
heal.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it is adjustable, you know, it's a wonderful thing. When I heard about lap band, it was like a light bulb went off over my head, because I knew it would work for me. I knew it would work.
I mean, it must feel great to be from 305 down to 185. That what a load off, literally. But is it comfortable, or is it you know, in terms of digestion and how you feel, Lorna? What about it?
Well, I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your question.
Is it comfortable in terms of digestion, eating meals?
Yeah, you really do have to be careful about what you eat. I can't eat, I won't eat, like, I won't go into a steakhouse and order a big steak, because I can't, you know, I could have a bite or two, and I'd be full. But you know, I eat a lot of Indian food. I eat, you know, pastas. I mean, I can eat pretty much a regular diet.
And it's working out for you. Lorna, I appreciate your sharing that with us. That's a big weight loss, and it sounds like you're pretty happy with it. Let me get a couple more here, if I may. Lorna, thank you. Lisa in Glen Falls, New York. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am finding a lot of similarity in this program. I yesterday went to pre-op for my surgery, which is coming on Tuesday, for gastric bypass.
Okay.
I'm 49 as well,
mm-hmm,
as Chris, and yeah, it was something I would never have thought of in a million years. My physician suggested it to me with tears in his eyes, actually, telling me that, you know, our stomachs aren't designed for the year 2000. We live differently, and we have to make adjustments, and I'm somebody who has the comorbidities of the weight, diabetes is on the loom for me,
yeah,
hypertension I have,
yeah,
et cetera. So it's interesting how the press is taking off with this since it's been around for such a long time. And I'm in a public role in a private area, and I was, you know, toying with, how do you tell people? Is it a stigma?
Yeah. And what do you think? Are people open to hearing it now, or do they say, hey, Lisa, why don't you just go, you know, run a few miles?
Mostly people are really open. They're excited for me, and they're not realizing that it's not the easy way out, as the doctor pointed out, and that your whole life will change, but isn't it a good change? You know, living with weight is not easy, and it will make me more mobile and around for my kids.
Lisa, we wish you very good luck with that. Robin Blackstone, stand by in Tempe. I want to bring in Diana Zuckerman right here from Washington, D.C. She wrote an op-ed piece a couple years ago now, I guess, in the New York Times about the lap band surgery and her concern about it. She's president of the National Research Center for Women and Families. Diana Zuckerman, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for including me.
You were concerned in 2011 about the FDA signing off on more lap band surgeries. Are you past that concern today, or do you still have it?
Well, I believe that most of what I said then has come to pass, and in fact, the numbers for lap band surgery are about half what they were in 2008. So while gastric bypass surgery and other bariatric surgeries are kind of on an even keel or going up, it's the lap band surgery that is much less popular for some of the reasons that have been raised.
Like what? I mean, Chris Christie's just decided to do it, and he must have had options.
Well, that's a very interesting choice that he's made. One of the issues for lap band surgery is that, unlike other kinds of bariatric surgery, it's putting something in your body, and that means the FDA has to make a decision about, is it safe and is it effective, which they don't do on other kinds of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of studies about bariatric surgery, but for lap bands, there are very few studies, and in fact, when the FDA approved it, they approved it on the basis of about 100 patients, which is a really small number compared to a new drug, for example, and there were almost no men in the study. The other thing that concerns me and should concern the governor is that the men in the study did not do very well. They tended to lose less weight. They tended to have more complications. So women are more likely to get lap band surgery, and women do tend to do better with it, and we actually know very little about how well men do. And as you've heard, some patients do very well and are very happy, but there are complications, and a lot of people lose weight initially, as the governor has, but they can't keep that weight off, and, you know, that's the advantage and disadvantage of lap bands is it's reversible.
Let me get a caller here, Donna from Canton, Connecticut. Donna, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Robin Blackstone and Diana Zuckerman.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm an internist
practicing primary care medicine here in northwestern Connecticut.
Yeah.
And, you know, my experience, I have probably 8 patients who underwent this type of surgery, primarily the lap banding. And each one lost a significant amount of weight the first 1 to 2 years, probably each over 100 pounds. But 5 years out, every patient except one has regained, I would say, 80% of that weight.
Wow.
I think people are looking at it as the solution to weight loss, but I think it's only part of what is going to make them successful. They have to change the behaviors and the way they eat that resulted in the weight gain to begin with.
But don't they all know that going in, Dr. Donna? I mean, you must tell them, everybody must tell them, look, just the lap band isn't going to do it alone.
Right, and in the beginning, they're very much able to participate with the other parts of the program, but I think as they get further out from their surgery, they go back to their old habits. I had a conversation with one of my patients, and, you know, it's comfort foods. It's how they deal with stress. It's, you know, part of their coping mechanism is to eat. And they haven't been able to bring that part of it under control.
Donna, thanks for your call. Robin Blackstone, Dr. Blackstone, that doesn't sound so great. 8 patients who have done it with Donna, all but one, 80% of their weight is back. That sounds rough.
It is, and it is a fact that people with a chronic disease like obesity are you know, capable of regaining some of their weight regardless of the procedure they have. But with the lap band, we have seen that. But I think that it's important to realize why they regain weight. And, you know, I think that it's easy for us to reach for a solution about, well, they're under a lot of stress and they use food as a comfort. But the truth of it is that in part, they regain weight because when you diet or when you have a lap band, some of the hormonal changes that occur favor you regaining weight. For instance, your ghrelin level, which we talked about a little while ago, goes up to very high levels, and it drives you to eat and regain that weight. If you're really, really hungry all the time, you know, you're gonna eat. So I think that the reason that people regain weight is a lot more complex than a lot of us realize. And, you know, no one feels worse about that than the patient. I mean, the patients already feel, you know, the object of prejudice and discrimination, but they feel internally that this is something they can't beat. And so it's really important that we all understand the science behind why they regain weight so that we can really address those root issues and help them. And I know that I can hear the compassion in Donna's voice around these patients and the frustration that they must have and that she feels in trying to work with them.
Diana, we just got you for another minute here. What do you think about the way the numbers are going here? Does it look like Americans are going too quickly to weight loss surgery, or you know, do we have obesity at such a scale that people may feel like they don't have an option? They're into that sort of morbid phase where they don't know how else to get rid of it.
I think both things are true. One of the reasons why the numbers have stabilized probably is because as people see what's happened to their friends who've used it, some of the friends are doing really well, have lost a lot of weight and kept it off. And those are mostly bypass patients. Some of the friends have lost a lot of weight and then gained it back, just as is so typical with diet and exercise. So it is true. It's hard to lose weight, and it's harder to keep it off, and that it's hard regardless of how you lose it. It's hard to keep it off. But do you really want to go into surgery, which has other risks as well, if you're not going to have a better outcome? So in this case, with bariatric surgery, the weight loss is much more dramatic, but with lap bands, as you've heard, it often isn't successful in the long term, and that means it doesn't really improve health.
Diana Zuckerman, president of the National Research Center for Women and Families. Thanks for joining us today, Diana.
Thanks so much.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about weight loss surgery, its popularity, who it's for, who it's not, whether it's a good thing that we're turning to it. New Jersey Governor Big Chris Christie just had his lap band surgery. They say he has lost 40 pounds. What do you think? Is this the way to go? Have you done it? What's your experience? Is it the path? Dr. Robin Blackstone is with us from the Scottsdale Healthcare Bariatric Center in Tempe, Arizona. And with us right now, just for a couple of minutes, from Los Angeles is Mark Ambender, contributing editor of The Atlantic. He's written about his own bariatric surgery for the magazine Gastric Bypass. Mark Ambender, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
Why'd you do it? How'd it work?
I did it for a mix of personal and professional reasons. I did it in early 2009, and it worked in the sense that I lost about 85% of my excess weight, and I've kept it off. And as virtually every other caller has mentioned here, it hasn't been easy in some ways. The surgery, which was, you know, for me, a major surgery. It was an open gastric bypass procedure, so I have a nice scar to account for it.
Yep.
The surgery was a surgery, and it was almost the easy part. The hard part is training your brain to account for the enormous changes in your life. The stress on your body of losing weight so rapidly, and the psychological stress that creates, dealing with that, transplanting your comfort food addiction to other things, figuring out how to deal with food, what types of food you're going to eat, dealing with the way you look in public, dealing with the way you interact with other people. All of that is in some ways a lifelong process, a process I still have trouble with even today. There are times when I'll have food that I haven't had since the surgery, and it turns out I can't have that food, and I'll have to make a very quick trip to the bathroom.
Because you've got less digestive system down there, so if it's not right, you're going to have oopsie in a hurry?
No, it's more just you learn. I mean, I didn't have any Al Roker moments at the White House.
Which he did, yeah.
Which, of course, he had a sort of a public oopsie, as he is, yeah. to put in your terms, he has disclosed. For me, very weirdly, if I have any Vietnamese food, it fills the relatively small pouch I have as a stomach very, very quickly and sends hormones up very, very quickly. I feel extremely full. And if I have more than a tiny bit of Vietnamese food, then I'm in the bathroom of the restaurant probably excavating it.
Yeah.
Through my stomach and my mouth.
Wow. So is it on balance? I mean, you've lost a lot of weight. That's great.
Yeah.
But is it fun or miserable or something in between?
Not miserable. it's my life. It's not miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had diabetes. I had severe sleep. I was 30 years old. I wasn't that overweight. I had a lot of what your guests have called comorbidities. I was severely diabetic. I had severe sleep apnea. My cholesterol was very high.
Yep.
And now I have no diabetes. I have no sleep apnea. Getting out of a car in a small parking space is extremely hard when you're overweight, and it's not when you're not.
When friends who want to lose weight ask you about it, do you recommend it, Mark? We know you're not a doctor, but in general, do you say, yeah, you should check it out or not?
If you lose 20 or 30 pounds, then no. But if they are obese or morbidly obese or obese, and they have the support system in place to handle what happens after, and they prepare themselves, then I would recommend it unreservedly, so long as they're aware of the risks of surgery. Because once you get to a point where you're 80 to 100 pounds plus overweight, the chances of you being able to lose that weight using any diet, any combination of diet and exercise on your own, is just minuscule. The only intervention that there is, one of these three versions of bariatric surgeries. And again, it ain't easy. You got to do a lot of work. And if you do it, if you do the work and you're conscientious and diligent, the chances of you're keeping it off are going to be higher than if you just, I'm going to have the surgery and and then let things happen.
So there's a thumbs up, but do not go into it lightly. You're going to live with it for a long time. Mark Amater with The Atlantic, we're linking to your pieces on this at our website, and we're grateful to you for being with us today from L.A. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Sure, thank you.
Let me get one more of you here from New York. Marion Nessel joins us, professor of nutrition, food studies, public health at New York University, co-author of Why Calories Count, author of lots of books on nutrition, what to eat, food politics. Marion Nessel, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here.
Chris Christie has put weight loss surgery front and center again. You think a lot about nutrition and how we take care of ourselves. What do you think about this path?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate that we're at a state in our society where this kind of surgery seems like the only option for people who are overweight. I mean, if it tells me one thing, I think this surgery is not for the faint-hearted. It's surgery, after all, and carries risks, and then the lifetime of what you have to do afterwards is really pretty tough. It's certainly not something I would want to contemplate, and I think it really focuses on how important it is to prevent obesity before it happens. It's difficult to lose weight once you've gained a lot of weight, although there are people who can do it.
But of course, it's not the only option, Marion, right? I mean, you use that phrase, but this is a pretty small portion of the very many obese Americans go for this option, right?
Well, it's an increasing number, in part because bariatric surgery is advertised by its practitioners as the only solution to overweight. And the number of people who are going through the surgery is increasing, and the surgery is being recommended for people who are younger and younger and younger, down to very young children now. I'm not sure that that makes sense, either ethically or any other way. And it's hard to believe that it's the only or best option. Certainly there are people who can lose weight. It's difficult. But it's difficult to manage post-bariatric surgery, too.
Yeah. Dr. Blackstone, here's a listener on Facebook writing to us that she thinks Melissa says it's a symptom of our quick-fix society. Eat clean, be active, and you will lose weight. You don't need the surgery, is her suggestion. What do you say, Robin?
You know, I think that for people that are 15 or 20 pounds overweight, that's a good option. The problem is that once you get to be, you know, in the 80 to 100 pound overweight range, your biology has changed and your leptin resistance is big, which means that your metabolism is really dead in the water. And, you know, I think that people don't realize that there's been a lot of randomized prospective trials that looked at exercise and behavior, and people do lose 8% or 10% of their weight. They usually always regain it in a short period of time when they're at this level. And, you know, it's important to realize we're not talking about operating on overweight people. We're talking about operating on obesity. And that's a very different definition.
Well, but are you? I mean, you said that if you're more than 15 or 20 pounds overweight, maybe you're suggesting this is the way to go. But that describes millions of Americans.
No, I'm saying it's not the way to go. I would not recommend surgery for that group of people.
But if you're more than 20 pounds overweight, then do you begin to?
You know, I think we're really talking about people that are 50, 75, 100 pounds overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And in the lower weight range, you know, the National Institutes of Health have said, you know, if your BMI is 35 and that's about, you know, 75 pounds overweight, then you need to have a medical problem that you're addressing for this. And, you know, increasingly, Tom, we're seeing people turn to the solution because they have diabetes. And we know that the diabetes has a very good chance of going into remission after some of these procedures. So I really think that you have to be careful to know that we're not recommending this for overweight.
We're talking about
obesity.
Yeah, Marion, you may recoil from this, and I totally get that, the idea of lots and lots and lots of people doing it. On the other hand, look around. We've got a whole lot of people with packing a lot of weight. They're going to have all kinds of implications without this surgery, Marion.
Some are, some aren't. The type 2 diabetes issue is a particularly interesting one because many people can resolve symptoms of type 2 diabetes if they lose a relatively small amount of weight, say 5 to 10 pounds, depending on how big they are. And then if you're 50 pounds overweight and don't have symptoms of chronic disease, you may be adding to your problems unnecessarily. I think it's something that requires a great deal of thought. I'm kind of horrified by how many people are promoting bariatric surgery for people who really could lose a little weight and keep it off. And we now have plenty of evidence on what it takes to lose weight, because there's been this ongoing study of successful dieters. And these are people who diet and exercise and watch their weight, monitor their weight very carefully, and they have managed to lose large amounts of weight and keep it off over a long period of time. So it can be done. Not everybody can do it.
Let me get a call from New Orleans here. Beth is calling. Hi, Beth. Thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make mention, because I haven't heard it yet, I've been hearing about prevention efforts. We're talking about lifestyle, diet, exercise, and surgery.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of in a time where we see a lot of high-profile weight loss surgery, it almost seems like there's less stigma around going under the knife than there is about accessing mental health services to do that fearless self-examination that it might take to examine the cognitive, emotional, and behavioral components of, you know, obesity and where, you know, what role eating has in your life as a coping mechanism, as a couple of other callers had mentioned. And so it's kind of terrifying to me that by no means is, you know, weight loss surgery an easy way out, but that, you know, it's kind of sounding like the only option for people who might need and certainly deserve support from a trained mental health professional who might help them make those connections. Dr.
Yeah,
Blackstone
yeah.
was talking about how this surgery offers patients more control. So does mental health counseling.
Beth, you open up a really important aspect to this. I'm really glad you called from New Orleans there. Dr. Blackstone, how about it? First of all, do people get counseling or even mental health help before they get the surgery? Do you look at someone's psychological profile to see if they're going to be able to or likely be able to sort of follow through with the full package of things beyond and around the surgery to make it successful?
You know, it's such a great thing that she called, because we, in an accredited national program, you are going to absolutely have psychology and mental health as part of your comprehensive approach to this. And, you know, in an accredited center, you can't even go to surgery without a very comprehensive set of evaluations, both objective testing, psychological testing, as well as interviews with the patient. Every program offers support, both online and live support groups, again, led by mental health professionals. And, you know, it's really a part of our approach to try to make sure that we're addressing the whole person.
But these surgeries are a business. Isn't it tempting to say, oh, you'll be fine, let's do it?
You know, it might have been before 2004, but in 2004, we really established a medical model around this type of procedure. Mm. And it's not very – you can't come to surgery very quickly. You have to spend a lot of time getting educated about what you're going to have to do to use the particular surgery you have, doing your mental health piece, working with your registered dietitians. Some programs even require that you work through a process of really changing your diet ahead of time to make it easier on you afterwards. So it's a pretty formalized process now under these accredited centers that exist.
Marion, I'll bring that to you. Let me get Sharon in here first from Nashville. Sharon, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'll be brief. Mm-hmm. I had surgery more than 30 years ago now. At that time, the popular surgery was an intestinal bypass.
Okay.
And I have lived ever since with horrendous problems. There was no support before, not much information, no support after, not much information before, except that this was what was necessary.
What kind of problems? This was for weight loss?
I have multiple problems. Chronic diarrhea, there are many, many things I can't eat. I have not had the moments that Al Roker has, but I have come very, very close.
Yep.
and it is not fun. I had to go back in at one point several years ago and have some scar tissue taken care of that was creating a blockage. It's just been horrible, and what I would just tell people is to be very, very informed. I totally agree that a lot of times this is taken as the quick fix, and I have known many people that have had various forms of lap band and the bypass surgery, and I have seen multiple problems. So just be very, very careful and know that's what's right for you.
Big heads up. Sharon, I appreciate your call. Dr. Blackstone, our time is short. That's a long time ago, but still, that's a lot of almost misery, it sounds like Sharon's describing.
Yeah, and I just want to tell Sharon that I'm sorry for the problems that she's experienced. We studied that procedure, and actually that procedure hasn't been done probably in 25 years because of the issues that she raises with it. The modern procedures are very much more scientifically robust, and we know a lot more about how they work and how to deal with the risks that people have with them. So I think the era of bariatric surgery is quite different now, and it is very safe now to have surgery. I think that influences a lot of people's opinion about it.
Mary Nissel, we've just got half a minute here. For those people out there who, you know, maybe they are that 50 or 100 pounds overweight or more, or know someone in their family who is, what's your advice to them about how to think about this whole picture, surgery included?
Yeah, it really troubles me when people who do bariatric surgery make it sound as if it's a walk in the park. It's not. And I really think that diet is the approach to go. It needs to be tried, and it needs to be tried in a very, very serious way. I wish we had a healthcare system that would support people who were trying to diet, both mentally and physically. We don't have that kind of a system, and we're leaving people entirely on their own. Surgery offers a quick fix. I think the consequences of it are really pretty sobering, and that people should think twice, four times, 10 times before jumping into something like that.
Well, we wish the best of luck to Chris Christie and to everybody here. But yes, there's a lot to think about. Don't do it just casually. Marion Nissel at the Food Studies and Public Health Department at NYU. Joining us today from New York. Marion, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Robin Blackstone with the Scottsdale Healthcare Bariatric Center. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great Gatsby right here tomorrow. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.